Larson and Clint Wright joining me this evening on the Coach's Corner panel. We're going to take a quick break, and then we will welcome my very special guest, world-renowned golf landscape painter, artist, Linda Harto. She'll be joining me here in just a moment after these brief messages.
This edition of Golf Talk Live is brought to you by Golf Pal, the best place to find only the finest in golf training aids and accessories. Get in on some great deals on leading products such as Down Under Board, Rough Soto, Golf Slingshot, and more. Visit golfpal.golf today. And don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter. Golf Pal. We're serious about your game.
The following ad is sponsored by Golf Tips Magazine.
Are you tired of being short off the tee? And what about those three putts? Forget about it. It's time you got serious about your game. Golf Tips, the most in-depth magazine in the industry. For over 30 years, Golf Tips has delivered expert content such as the latest golf instruction from America's top pros, simple to follow practice and game improvement drills, fitness and mental game tips, equipment, training aids, accessory and apparel reviews, golf destinations and travel tips for every budget, and so much more. Don't miss a single issue. Go to golftipsmag.com and subscribe today.
All right. Once again, thank you everybody for joining me this evening. I'm very excited to welcome back my special guest, Linda Harto. I'm going to tell you a little bit about her, just for those of you that maybe weren't tuned in the last time she was on. I'll just tell you a little bit about her, and then I will bring her on, and we'll begin our interview portion of the show. Linda is a world-renowned golf landscape artist. Her work is displayed in the permanent collections of such legendary clubs as Augusta National, Laurel Valley, Pinehurst, and Pine Valley, in the personal collections of such golf notables as Jack Nicklaus, Ray Floyd, and Reese Jones, and in the collections of the USGA Museum in Far Hills, New Jersey, and in the Morris Museum of Art in Augusta, Georgia. Her paintings of various holes at Augusta National Golf Club are prized by collectors the world over. In addition, Linda painted the first of the U.S. Open Series in 1990, commissioned by the USGA, a 25-year series she completed in 2014, as well as her British Open Championship Series from 1990 to 99. In 2017, Linda was an inductee into the Lowcountry Golf Hall of Fame and has been honored with the Golf Digest Lifetime Achievement Award. So please welcome my very special guest again this evening, Linda Harto.
Hi.
Good evening, Linda, and welcome back.
Very nice.
How are you
to be
doing?
Here. I'm doing just great. Thank you. That was a wonderful introduction. Thank you.
Well, I went from memory. No, I didn't. I had my little cheat sheet here. You had so many accolades. It was hard so I had to write them all down, of course. But welcome back, Linda. I really appreciate you coming back.
Thank you.
I thought what we would do. You're very welcome. My pleasure. I thought what we would do is maybe go back a little bit before we get into the main part of our discussion. And maybe you could just talk about how you got to do what you do. Because, you know, it's not just like you woke up one day and said, well, I'm gonna paint golf landscapes or I'm going
right.
to paint, you know, famous golf holes. There was a process. So walk us back a little. Go back in time a little bit and walk us through that process, how you got to where you are today.
Okay. Well, I've always been an artist as long as I can remember. So art has always been the first thing in my life. And I painted a lot of different subjects and have always made my living from my art. So I learned, you know, kind of to be able to do commission work. And in 1984, I was asked if I could paint a golf course. And I said, sure. And it happened to be Augusta National. So that's how I got started with golf art. The pros there, which was Dave Spencer and Bob Kletke at the time, they were looking for an artist to paint and make some prints so they could sell them at the Masters. And my first one was the 13th hole, And they took the painting and had it printed at the local commercial printer, a friend of theirs, which I had never printed my work before, so it was all new experience for me, for sure. But anyhow, that's how it got started, and then I worked, you know, I did several paintings for them, and, well, it was 85, 86, 87, and 88, and by then other clubs were calling me, so I thought, wow, there's must be something to this. Yeah. Of course, at the time, I didn't realize, you know, that I actually, had I started with any other club, probably it would have been one and done. But
right.
Since it was Augusta, it was like instant introduction into the golf world. So, and they really appreciated my art. So I thought, well, you know, this is maybe a good thing here.
Well, and what's interesting about it is, I mean, you've done a lot of famous holes and mm-hmm. a lot of you know, golf courses over the years, you know, mm-hmm. since then. But you're right. I think starting with something like Augusta National sort of really got you going right out of the gate. And
right.
I think you're right. I think if you had have gone, you know, to the local Muni down the street, not that the
right.
artwork wouldn't have spoken volumes, but again, it probably wouldn't have resonated quite as much within the golfing industry. But you very quickly became, you know, world-renowned. I mean, you literally, mm-hmm. From a very early point, developed a lot of recognition to the point where others, U.S. Open venues as well, started reaching out and saying, hey, we would like you to do, you know, X, Y, Z. So it was
right.
like a snowball effect.
Yeah, it really was.
Really
But I think the real turning point was when I just started investigating the golf world as a business and went to the 1988 PGA show. And that was a real eye-opener. I realized mm-hmm. that there was nothing out there. There was no art. There was no anything, you know, worthy, I thought. And I thought, wow, this is wide open. And through that very show, I got connected with a gentleman in Scotland who was a golf antiques dealer. So we kind of went into business together starting then, and he was responsible for helping me get my commission with the R&A for the Open Championship, and then as soon as that was secure, he went right over and talked to the USGA, and we started that. So we started both those series in 1990. And at the same time, I was determined to bring the print quality to fine art as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to go and find printers and literally learn the entire process of printing and publishing by myself. But I did. I was determined, you know, to have state-of-the-art every part, you know, not just the painting, but the prints as well.
Right, exactly. And you know, that's no easy task to be able to do
no.
that. So, you know, it took a lot of work. I want to talk about for a little bit, again, so
mm-hmm.
so people can really appreciate what it is that you do. Talk about the actual process. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was surprised. I mean, I knew that it would take, you know, even the best of the best a while to actually complete a painting. But there's
mm-hmm.
a lot of prep work that goes into it as well. So maybe you can kind of walk us through a little bit of that. When you first either get, you know, approached to do a specific hole or
mm-hmm.
part of a course or something along that idea, where does it begin?
Well, it begins really with an agreement, of course. But then I go to the actual course, and it's a process of kind of listening to people at the course, you know, the pros and the people that play there, what is their most memorable holes? What do they think of when they think of that course? And then I like to see the whole course and kind of get a feeling for its character. And then I kind of zero in on the particular holes that I think would make a good representation. And then once we agree on that, or there may be several holes, then I have to photograph those holes in the right light, which is always tricky.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's the part that really, as a fine artist, that's the part that interests me the most, is how is that hole lit? How does it look? And I have to find that perfect lighting, which really shows off everything I want you to be able to see. So that can take a while. You know, it can take a week. It can take weeks. It can take more than one trip to the course. You know, every time I went to Scotland, I'd go to St. Andrews. It would be different every single time I went. And even Augusta.
Right.
As many years as I went there to photograph, it was always different in some way. So you're just always looking for that particular scene that maybe you've never seen before. That particular lighting, angle, whatever. Yeah.
Do you ever find that, or have you ever found when you've gone somewhere, I mean, obviously you're, again, when you're talking about Augusta National and, over in Scotland, some of the open championship courses that they play on, Carnoustie and so forth, St. Andrews. Were there ever moments you got over there and whether it be the lighting or what have you just was not right and you just didn't feel like you were capturing the image? I figured that would be something that would happen. So what do you do in a case like that? You know, you can't, obviously I know you're not just going over for one day if you're going to Scotland, but if you have to go out to a course over several days, does there come a point you say, I guess I'm going to have to accept this, or you just say, no, I'm going to have to, keep trying. What do you do at that point?
Have to go another time, maybe another season even. Different lighting. It's just like at St. Andrews, if you go in the summertime, which, high summer, it's not as interesting as it is in late, like August, September, and October even. It's the angle of the sun on the significant holes makes a huge difference. And even the kind of light, the kind of light in September and October, I find much more beautiful than in high summer.
Mm-hmm.
And if they've had a dry year, sometimes I didn't even go to Scotland. I could tell just by watching the tournaments that this was not going to be a good year. you know how they can be when
because
it's dry.
Right.
You know, this just like wispy, rough, and not interesting to me. You know, I like to see them at their optimum.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was just about to say. You want to see them, figuratively speaking, in their best light. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to capture the essence of the whole. So now that you've gotten the images that you need, and again, that could happen over several weeks or days or what have you, depending on the circumstances.
Or years.
or even years. Now what happens? What's the next step? Once you look at the photos and you say, okay, these are going to work for me, then what's next in the process?
Well, what's next? Of course, while I'm there, I take hundreds of photographs, and I take overall shots and also detail shots. So if I have a scene, I will take the 300 millimeter shots of every piece of that scene. So there's 20, 30 shots, just one picture, one scene. And that way, when I'm working area, I have a detail that is just like being there, basically. When I have all those gazillion pictures and I'm home in the studio, I kind of lay them all out, or now I work on the computer looking at all these millions of pictures, and I just look for all the elements that are the best and finally decide on what it's going to look like. And that process could take quite a while, because I like to literally visualize the painting complete before I ever start. So that could take a while.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question. If you're being commissioned, let's say, to do something, whether it be Augusta or any of the courses that you're doing, and you've taken all these photos, do you then go back to them, whoever you're dealing with, and show them what you like, and do they sort of have involvement in what they want you to do at that point? I mean, obviously, there may be certain holes that they're looking at, or do they basically rely on your judgment to pick whatever image you're gonna transfer to the canvas, so to speak?
They were pretty good about listening to my take on it, and in knowing what it's going to be used for is significant, too. I mean, if it's the prints are to be sold at a tournament, or if, you know, it's for a club, a private club, it's ultimately, all those go into the decision making on which image it is. But it's usually mutually agreed upon pretty much before I even leave the property. It's left up, you know, in terms of the U.S. Open, it was usually just left up to me. And same way with the Open Championship. It's just whatever I thought.
Right. Well, sure. It's obviously your vision. I mean, they have certain things that they want, but obviously they're leaving it up to your expertise, because you're the one that's going to be essentially commissioning it.
But
I mentioned
also,
earlier, too. Go ahead.
Well, also, you know, I have, how shall we put it? Over all the years of marketing my own work and selling it personally, I developed a sense of knowing what the market wants and what will be successful and what won't. So a lot of times I have to convince, well, not a lot of times, but sometimes I have to convince the person or the people that the scene I've chosen is in their best interest.
Right.
You know.
So that's where a little arm twisting sometimes comes in, I guess.
Well, because like USGA will, they'll think of a hole completely differently than I do. They'll think of it, oh, well, this one has the most strategic advantages and the most history and this and that and this and that. But then as a painting, it would look like hell. So I have to convince them that, you know, this is not going to be a good image and people won't buy it. It's like, you know, the first time I did, well, I was commissioned to do the 17th hole at Pebble Beach, right? Well, they wanted me to do it from the tee. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
You know what the 17th hole looks like from the tee? It's like this little teeny strip golf and the rest is sky and grass. And I said, no, I'm not doing that. And they let me do it the way I wanted, and it's been one of the best-selling prints I've ever had.
Well, and see, and this is where, you know, the artist's eye sort of comes into it. I mean, you know, as you said, for them, it's about the nostalgia, and, you know, this hole was featured in whatever the case may be, or has had this level of history, but it may not actually be the best representation of even the course.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot of things to go into it. Now, I mentioned earlier, and I wanted to ask you, and again, you don't have to give specific examples on each of them, but just maybe a general overview. I mentioned that you've worked on or contributed to some of the personal collections of some notables, Jack Nicklaus, Reese Jones, and Raymond Floyd. Mm-hmm. What particularly were they looking for? Was it just specific holes, or were they just sort of wanting to sort of recapture moments in their history? What was some of the requests?
It was basically their significant. Well, as Jack Nicklaus, for instance, his significant wins.
Right.
He has seven paintings, and they were all his major wins and his favorite holes, mm-hmm. pretty much. And, Ray Floyd with Augusta, and then Reese Jones, these were courses he designed. So,
right.
You know, it was like a special, and even his father bought one of Hazeltine. That was one of his favorites. So there's all kinds of reasons.
So it was, Right. So it was more or less a walk down memory lane for them, as they wanted a record in whether it be a painting or even in print of some memorable moments throughout their history, either as a course designer or as a player who had a number of events that were successful for them. So obviously that would make sense. So it's very interesting that just what everybody's viewpoint. Now I mentioned too also that you were inducted into the Lowcountry Golf Hall of Fame and also honored by Golf Digest with the Lifetime Achievement Award. Those obviously had to be very special for you, correct?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
What did that mean when you got the call or got the –
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
Because for one thing, I've always felt like even though I was in the golf world, I was not really in it. You know, art is not exactly accepted as a major part of the game, even though it is. So as a kind of an outsider working in the golf world, it meant a huge thing. You know, it was huge to be recognized. And then also being a female and, well, at least when I started, what amounted to be a very male world, that was quite an achievement to negotiate that, you know, especially in the early days. I went to Pine Valley. I was actually in Pine Valley. How many women could have said that in 1990, you know?
Well, and you said, and I believe in 1988, you went to the PGA Merchandising Show and found that there really wasn't a lot in your area of expertise representing the golf industry, and really in that day and age, I mean that's what 20 something years ago, 30 some odd years ago, that's surprising with as much history and nostalgia that goes with golf to begin with. That's there really wasn't a lot of representation there. So you've obviously done a lot.
Too.
Right.
You know, it did. As a fine artist, you know, from training and my whole life orientation was towards fine art, to go and see an area, a genre that wasn't well represented at all with fine art, except for the antiquities. Now, there's plenty of fine art in the antiquities, but not current.
Right.
And then what little art there was out there was so poorly printed and presented and cheap. It was just like astounding to me that nobody had done anything with that. So I decided
So you could call yourself really somewhat of a pioneer then in golf to really, Well, I know you are.
I didn't know how much
saying.
Of one when I started. I just saw the potential.
Well,
I didn't know how hard it was going to be, but.
Well, you've fared very well over the years, obviously, and opened up a door. Yeah, you've opened up a door to an area of golf that, you know, really we had not seen up until that point. In 2003, you were one of the founding trustees of the Academy of Golf Art.
Right.
Tell us a little about that. Why was that? What was your thought process in developing that? What was it wanted to achieve?
Again, it was to bring to the art world recognition of a genre that wasn't being recognized.
Right.
I thought by forming the Academy and trying to have shows and connect collectors with artists and then providing a place for really good artists who may like to do golf art, providing them a place to do it and show it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not necessarily someone that did nothing but golf art, but recognized fine artists. There's plenty of them that like the game of golf, you know, and they'd probably really like to do it. So that was the idea. And we formed and we've had some shows, but, you know, we've had economic problems with different economy problems, a few here and there.
Right.
That would set us back, and then we'd get going again. And we're about, you know, dealing with that again, and hopefully we'll get through it again. So, but it's a process.
And you have a number of artists now that participate, that provide content, if you will, to the Academy of Golf Art. So it's obviously has grown. It, like any organization, it has its ups and downs, and, you know, fiscal economies obviously affect that. But overall, it's gained some momentum over the last 30 or so years. Since you really pioneered a lot, and people have taken an interest in not only what you do, but what some of the others do as well, correct?
Right, yes, and I think it's going to go to a different level here soon, too. So, yes, it's very exciting.
Very good. Now, I know that you also, I had a few weeks ago, I had Dr. Bernecki from the Golf Heritage Society, who was on, and I know you know him very well, and I understand you're going to be participating in a golf art symposium October 1st of this year in Monroeville, Pennsylvania. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. The Golf Historical Society is having their 50th year anniversary meeting, which is quite significant. And we just kind of our two organizations, the Academy of Golf Art and we're kind of, you know, aligned a lot, so we decided to combine forces, and we'd have a special exhibition, and also they put together this art symposium, which was really great. So, I think the collectors, it's good for the collectors to have that kind of information and be introduced to the future antiquities. Not just past ones, before we croak.
Right.
You know, they should be collecting us now, not later.
Right. I couldn't agree. I couldn't agree more. I think it's very good, as I mentioned when Dr. Byrne was on the show. I mean, you know, he obviously approaches things from a different area of golf. Again, he's looking at the heritage, if you will, of the game, and he's looking to pass that heritage on to future generations. I mean, he shared a number of stories when he was here about what they're trying to do to a younger generation to make them aware. And actually, what was quite interesting was how engaging, which is very surprising, especially this day and age, how engaging some of these youngsters were. and wanting to learn more. So
right.
when you look at the future of what you do in golf landscapes, where do you see or what would you like to see happen moving forward?
Well, we have a plan. And part of that, of course, is to incorporate working with young people and having, I don't know, maybe contests or just somehow getting involved with maybe first tee groups or, you know, just sponsoring classes for young people that might be interested in golf art, too. So there's all kinds of opportunity there. It's just that we just haven't got there yet. But it's in the
plan.
Well,
it's like everything. It's always a work in progress. I mean, it's always, mm-hmm. you have to do one step at a time. Now, you
yeah.
also have a website, and we'll talk mm-hmm. about that for a few moments, harto.com, and it's spelled HARTOUGH.com is your website. And
yes.
People can actually look at a lot of the work that you've done. Now, obviously, you do paintings, but you also have them then turning into prints as well, which you obviously sell.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
are there things that you're working on right now? Are there some new projects that you're working on now that you want to share with us?
Well, I've been working with private clubs recently. I haven't been doing too many of the championships, tournament work. I kind of ended those series, but I just finished one for Glenview in Chicago. They had the Western Open here just a couple of weeks ago, and mm-hmm. there's a few more private clubs in the future here. I forgot where I was going with that. as far as the website, we have we've been doing these Guess the Winner contests, where a major tournament like next week we'll have a Guess the Winner contest for the Tour Championship, and we give away a free print to people that guess the winner. So that's kind of fun, and it engages everyone. I think they really enjoy it, so that's something we like to do and keep that up. We'll have a Ryder Cup contest too, and that's kind of fun.
And
but we
for those
also,
that want to, obviously, go ahead. Please go ahead.
We also specialize in custom things. If somebody wants something in particular size, canvas, paper, or maybe texturized. We kind of specialize in doing and fitting, specific projects for either offices or homes or whatever. So you actually talk to a person when you order.
Yeah, that makes a big difference. I know I'm probably much like you. I'm not really fond of the automated systems that we
offer. I mean, you can order on the website like any other website, but the girl that works for me, Sharon, she's like, whatever we can do to accommodate, we figure out framing mm-hmm. for them and everything. So we just do whatever, and that's kind of
give them
our specialty right now is customer service.
Exactly, giving them a more customized mm-hmm. approach to customer service. So I agree. I think that's fantastic. I want to ask you something
mm-hmm.
here about when you're painting. I found this very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You talked a little bit. Maybe you could share a little bit of it again.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody looks at, I'm on your website right now, and that's why I'm asking, and there's the painting
in progress.
The painting of 13th green at Augusta National. And what's really interesting is
mm-hmm.
there's so much going on in the background with the trees and the azaleas
right.
and so forth. When you look at an image like this, where do you start? Where do you begin?
I look at it,
and obviously you're looking through a more experienced eye, but when you've got the photos and you've got the image in mind, but when
mm-hmm.
you start on a painting like this,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Where in the painting do you start?
Well, you can actually see that if you go to the studio tab and look at the drop down, you'll see works in progress. I guess that's what it is. And you can see a painting from start to finish. There's a number of ones there. You can just pick one you want to look at, and you'll see exactly how it's done. And I start out with just a plain blue line drawing, and then I start usually with the sky and the things that are furthest away and work towards the foreground.
So that's generally how obviously there's differences in every image that you're looking at, but generally that's how you work with, is you sort of work from the furthest to the closest.
Right. Like if you, look at any, you pick any one and click on it, you'll see all the progress of that painting. And you can make like a slideshow of it.
It's amazing. You know, when you look at through that, and I'm going to, again, we'll give the listeners the website here again in a second. And obviously we want to wait until after the show, after we're done, they can go and check it out. I was just being a little bit nosy, and I wanted to ask you that because it's very interesting. I find it, I'm certainly not going to try my hand at what you're doing here because I'm quite certain it's going to look entirely different than what you have. But it's always interesting to me trust me, it's going to look much different. But when I look at these images, and it's very, very interesting because it starts off something very, very, what you would think would be simplistic looking. But as you evolve through the various images and you start to see it take shape, it's just amazing. And then when you see the finished product, the amount of detail that obviously went into it and how it sort of progressed, it is very, very interesting in the process. And, was this something that you sort of somewhat came naturally? I don't mean, obviously you were involved at an earlier age in artists, but is this a technique that you're taught along the way when you went to school and that and was first learning how to become an artist? How did you learn to do that? Because that's not something
I'd have to say it evolved. Okay. And the way I paint is not the way you're taught to paint. I paint in sections, which, every teacher tells you to work the whole painting up at once. Well, as you can see, most of that canvas is blank. Each part I do is finished. It's like a process called alla prima, where you're putting all that paint on and working it wet, and it's done before you move on to the next section. So each piece fits into the next piece, basically. It's kind of a weird way of working.
It's almost like a jigsaw puzzle, really.
Exactly.
If you think about it, each piece you find, and then you find the next piece, or in your case, you develop and paint the next piece that goes into
Whatever comes next.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, right. It's like, if there's trees in the sky, then the trees have to be in the sky before I get to the next section. So, it's hard to explain. You have to look at those paintings in progress to see you get a general idea of how it's done. And like I said, it's not the way anyone's taught to paint. And most artists even look at it and go, what? They don't quite get it either.
Well, that's
the
probably what
take a very long.
You.
Yeah, they take a very long time to do too. I mean, depending on the size, they can take up to 6 months or more.
Wow.
So it's a long process.
Well, I can assure you it would be much longer than 6 months for me. It might be closer to 6 years And that would still be working on the sky, and I'm sure many people looking at my images would probably still be scratching their head for another couple of years after, trying to figure out what it was I was trying to accomplish. But you obviously were very blessed with a wonderful talent, and
well, that helped.
You know, have been, sure. I mean,
I was born with that, and that was just there. I've always had it. I've always had a color sense. I've always had a perspective sense. So I didn't have to struggle much, you know, to get where I was. And that's why the work constantly evolves. It just building on, you know, what you already know, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, everybody, I think everybody has some skill or what have you very
mm-hmm.
early on, and it's a matter of you know, sort of building that out, as you said, and some people never exercise that particular area,
right.
Unfortunately, and others do. So I want to go back very briefly, if we can, to the AGA or the Academy of Golf Art.
Mm-hmm.
You're obviously, guys are very open to accepting new artist members and that. Is there
mm-hmm.
a process? What do they have to go through? If somebody that may be tuning into the show that has, you know, developed
mm-hmm.
Some artistic talent themselves, and particularly in this field of golf,
mm-hmm.
how do they go about becoming a member of the AGA? What's involved in that?
Well, they have to go to the website and make contact and then submit their work. I mean, basically representations of what they're doing. And then we kind of all get together and decide. You know, there's different levels
of
membership.
Sure. Are there things that you look for as members, as you're looking at new members? Are there things in the work that you're looking? I mean, for instance, if you've got two people and they're kind of almost exactly the same, does that matter?
It's a skill level,
okay.
Basically. I mean, you're looking for depth and skill and...
Right.
And imagery, obviously, there's so many aspects of what makes a good painting. You're just looking mm-hmm. for all of that.
Got it. Well, I think that, I think, like I said, what you've done from the very beginning in really opening up this line of, you know, of artistic talent that really
mm-hmm.
has not been seen in the golf industry for a long time is a great gift, not just the actual artwork itself, but just that you've opened a door really for others to walk through. And as I said earlier, you really are a pioneer of golf art, and your repertoire of work and the different groups that you've worked with and continue to work
mm-hmm.
with obviously shows that very, very well. And I know you're very, very proud of what you do, and I know you obviously enjoy
yeah.
that. And even though you said you never set out to get in the golf business, you've certainly
it didn't take me long to decide that it was a good place to be.
Right.
I mean,
well,
I really enjoy
yeah,
the golf people, and I love the different landscape of all the different courses, and it's a really wonderful world, the golf world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
the people really appreciate everything I do. It's not like, well, for a while I was working with equine work art, and the difference in the people, it was like, you know, they didn't like anything unless it was their horse or their breed. And
right.
I found that really off-putting. So when I started with the golf, you know, it was like, oh, they love everything you do. It didn't matter if they'd ever played the course even, or it wasn't their particular club. They just appreciated it so much, and I thought, boy, this is great. These are great people.
Well, I think golf has a very unique advantage, if you will, over a lot of other industries and a lot of even other
yeah.
sports. Golf has a very long history,
uh-huh.
Hundreds of years, in fact, and it's had so many different people that have, from people very, very early on to, the Arnold Palmers and the Jack Nicklaus and,
mm-hmm.
A little bit later on Tiger Woods and some of the young ones coming up now, and even a lot of the young ladies who have gone on and done things to really change the way we see golf today. And really you're able to capture so much of that in your paintings.
Well, I'll tell you,
even
you
those
know,
that
golf is a discipline and so is art.
Mm-hmm.
And I can
right.
really relate to it on that, even though I don't play the game. I appreciate it on that
mm-hmm.
level. I love watching people play. Love
mm-hmm.
watching the tournaments and seeing what it takes to be a professional golf player is incredible. It's an
mm-hmm.
amazing, amazing game. You could play at any level. Fantastic.
And I think that's what the appeal is.
Uh-huh.
We all would love, those of us that play would love to, be battling it out on Augusta, St. Andrews or some of the other, Pebble Beach or what have you. But
sure.
the interesting thing is even at the most novice level,
mm-hmm.
You look at little kids and junior programs and things, there's just, it just takes, and we've talked about this many times on my show, it just
mm-hmm.
takes that one well-struck shot to bring somebody back. They could be a terrible golfer overall, but one good shot or one good drive, and it's just enough to keep their interest going. And very few other sports can do that. And
right.
so I think what you're doing, again, being able to capture so much of that is obviously very appealing and has become so for these last several decades. But well, Linda, I want to thank you once again for joining me tonight
mm-hmm.
on Golf Talk Live. I appreciate it very much. I enjoy our conversation. You've got a lot of great insight into what you do and make it very interesting to want to learn more. So for the folks
mm-hmm.
listening, there's two websites I'm going to direct you to. First and foremost, Linda's website, which is harto.com, and it's HARTOUGH.com.
Yes,
you can see a lot of her great work.
Everyone to sign up for the emails because that's where you get your Guess the Winner contest.
All right, definitely do that. Sign up for their email while they go there, mm-hmm. harto.com. And then also check out the Academy of Golf Art.
Mm-hmm.
Their website is academyofgolfart.org. If you're somebody that's maybe an artist yourself and you want to find out about how to get your work connected with them, you can go there as well. And just to see some of the other golf artists in addition to Linda. But Linda, thank you very much once again for joining me this evening on Golf Talk Live. It's a pleasure.
Well,
I enjoyed having you on the show.
Enjoyed it very much.
And
you're
welcome. And much continued success. And I hope you'll come back and join me again in a future show.
Love to.
All right. You
right.
have a great evening and a great weekend. And thank you again.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. That was Linda Harto. She is a world-renowned golf landscape artist. And you can find her on her website at Harto, that's HARTOUGH.com. You can check out all of her work, and you can actually check out the process. You can see some of the paintings, the work in progress, if you will, on there, some of the paintings that she's done, and see how she, the first few images, and as it goes along from beginning to end, you can see the process that we talked about here tonight on there as well. And don't forget to sign up for their email newsletter, if you will. Get on their mailing list, and you can get a lot of great opportunities there as well. And then don't forget to also go visit the Academy of Golf Art.org, their website, to check out some of the other artists as well. But I want to thank the gang, if you will, from Coach's Corner, Tim Kramer, Alicia Larson, and Clint Wright. Thanks, guys, for doing a great job earlier on the show, and I appreciate you tuning in and listening to my conversation with Linda Hartow, world-renowned golf landscape artist. I will see you next week for another show, another great panel on Coach's Corner, and another insightful interview with my special guest here on Golf Talk Live. God bless everybody. Be safe and have a great weekend.
Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this week's broadcast of Golf Talk Live. We'd like to thank this week's Coach's Corner panel and a special thank you to tonight's guest. Remember to join Ted every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. Central on Golf Talk Live. And be sure to follow Ted on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you're interested in being a guest on Golf Talk Live, send Ted an email at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. This has been a production of the iGolf Sports Network.